This meeting is now being recorded.
Well, welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 2 Legal Regulatory Issues Call on the 12th of October, 2017. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the meeting back over to Michael Fleming.
Thank you, Michelle. Could we get the slides uploaded, please? Thank you. I just want to quickly, once again, apologize to everyone for changing the scheduled topic for this week at the last minute. These weekly calls left a lot of room for planning in between them. And so we made the decision that we'll need more time in order to have some input in regards to closed generics before we can continue with that. But at the same time, it's not exactly bad to have a small break to kind of clear our slates for something else. So this week we'll be discussing terms and conditions. Are the slides unsynced, or are they synced and everybody's seeing me scrolling back and forth with the screen? Just a quick check. Unsynced. All right. Good. So I am now on the agenda page, and please bear with me because the scrolling feature is not the best here. So once again, welcome everyone. It is late night for me this time, so I probably sound a bit more down to earth than I usually do. And I'd also like to take this opportunity to ask if anyone has an SOI update. Please feel free to share now. I'll pause briefly for this. Cheryl, you have your hand raised, and I am hoping this is the good news, so please go ahead.
Well, I don't know. It's Cheryl for the record. Whether it's good news or not, I guess, is yet to be determined. In fact, I have recently, in the last hour or so, finished the GNSO Council call for this week, and pleased to report that the Council did see fit to confirm me as a co-chair along with Avery and Jeff, and to continue on in replacement of Avery once she becomes a member of the board. And the other thing is, I was also at an annual general meeting earlier today, and I was reconfirmed as a continuing director of the Internet Society chapter that operates Australia-wide. So just two little pieces of update. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl, and congratulations as well. Does anyone else have an SOI update that they would like to share? Hearing none, then I will continue forward. And just before we move on, an apology if you hear some background noise. That is just my wife watching TV in the other room. So once again, this week we'll be discussing terms and conditions. And first and foremost, I would like to just introduce you to the schedule that we have for the next few weeks or so. As always, our goal right now is to move towards deliberations and proposals for steps forward for the initial report. Our meeting this week, we're looking at application terms and conditions. And next week, I know this is put as to be determined, but I'm expecting it'll be closed generics. If not, we'll keep moving forward with the other CC2 comments. And just a heads up, the week after next, we will not be having a meeting because obviously it's the week of beginning the ICANN 60 meeting, but also many people will be in transit for the time in which we would usually have a meeting. And as for our topics at ICANN 60, this is something that we need to consider. I would like to open the floor to if anyone has any suggestions for what they'd like to have see discussed there. But at the current time, I am currently waiting on this a little bit to see how far we can progress in our next meeting before deciding on full topics. I think this will be the best opportunity to have some even some face-to-face discussion in regards to what we might have already discussed here on the weekly calls, or normally bi-weekly calls, but just because, the more participants usually come to the face-to-face or opportunity to seek feedback we don't normally get. So that will be in moving forward in the coming weeks. So let's move into the application terms and conditions. This is a discussion recap, and like I said, please bear with me scrolling here. So far, we had originally, this application terms and conditions was not a topic that was proposed in the original issue report, and wasn't something we were delegated with in the beginning, but thanks to the recommendation of, I believe, Paul McGrady, we decided to include this here in the work track too. And so we had a call about this originally, and we went over all the sections, or at least a brief summary of the sections that are listed or in detail in the terms and conditions. And while there are many sections, we did not feel the need to discuss all of them in full detail. But sections 3, 6, and 14 are of particular interest because there's been a few cases involving ICANN and legal battles outside of the industry, of course. Within the industry, but we all hear about it in the news, I'm assuming. If not, I'd be happy to share those details with anyone who has questions. But cases where, for example, is the disclosure clause not to sue ICANN enforceable or not? There were a few cases in regards to that. There's a continuing case actually in regards to that. There've been a couple of other lawsuits where this has also come into question, but we took these back and we found that particular interest, at least within this within the section 3, 6, and 14, these merited us to discuss. Just as a quick recap, the summaries I provided in our previous meeting, I've also highlighted here again, and just for the sake of everyone being on the same page, I'll just quickly read through them. So Section 3, these are my own summaries. If anyone interprets them differently, then please feel free to make that clear. The applicant agrees, for Section 3, the applicant agrees that ICANN has the right to determine not to proceed with any and all applications for new GTLDs. The decision to review and delegate new GTLDs after approval is at ICANN's discretion. Section 6, the applicant releases ICANN from any claims by applicant related to ICANN's review, applicant's withdrawal, or ICANN's decision of application. Applicant agrees not to challenge ICANN in court in regards to any final decision made by ICANN in regards to the application. And Section 14, applicant understands ICANN reserves the right to make updates, changes to the applicant guidebook and application process, and that applicant will be subject to such changes. If such changes are made after application has been submitted and presents material hardship to ICANN, ICANN will work to accommodate applicant. So, as for our discussions, and I'm now moving on to page 5, we discussed quite a bit, and we also had questions in regards to this in the CC2 comments. And the result of that, with the Section 3, we saw that some respondents suggested clarifying language and perhaps referencing documents that could be read in conjunction with the section, specifically speaking the ICANN bylaws and sections of the applicant guidebook on eligibility, evaluation process, and review process. For Section 6, and this one really does require a bit more attention, one of the specific proposals was for policy language was put forward, which actually would bring in alongside the covenant not to sue contingent, an appeals mechanism. And I'm not 100% sure if this is an exact quote or not, but from the summaries sheet that staff had put together, I took this directly from that, so I'm just going to read it as is, as if it was a quote. I'm not sure who exactly made it, but we'll get to find out when we go through the CC2 comments, I hope. So ICANN must build into the new GTLD program appeals mechanisms to include the ability for applicants to challenge the decision of the ICANN staff, the ICANN board, and or any entities delegated decision-making authority over the assignment, contracting, and delegation of new GTLDs. Such appeals mechanism must include the ability to review those decisions on the merit and not only with respect to whether ICANN violated the bylaws. Only with such an appeals process performed by an independent entity could ICANN then include a covenant not to sue in the applicant terms and conditions. However, the covenant not to sue shall not apply to cases alleging fraud, negligence, or willful misconduct. And some of the other CCG comments supported this idea of an appeals mechanism. And then with Section 14, we saw that some of the CC2 comments emphasized the importance of predictability and having a framework for change management. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and break into the CC2 comments. Is there anybody at this point that would like have a question or anything in regards to what we've already covered? If not, I'll just go forward then. So the first question we asked applicants was in 2.5.1. It is a rather long one, so I will read as is. The following language appears in Section 3 of the applicant terms and conditions. Applicant acknowledges and agrees that ICANN has the right to determine not to proceed with any and all applications for new GTLDs, and that there is no assurance that any GTLDs will be created. The decision to review, consider, and approve an application to establish one or more GTLDs and to delegate new GTLDs after such approval is entirely at ICANN's discretion. ICANN reserves the right to reject any application that ICANN is prohibited from considering under applicable law or policy, in which case any fees submitted in connection with such application will be returned to the applicant. Do you believe that this paragraph gives ICANN an absolute right to reject any application for any reason, including a reason that contradicts the applicant guidebook or any law or policy? If yes, should such an unrestricted right appear in any modifications to the guidebook? If no, please list the other documents that you believe should be read in conjunction with this paragraph. Example given, GMSO policy on new GTLDs, ICANN bylaws, other proportions of the guidebook, California implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing, etc. So, going through our responses here, and please, if anyone has anything they'd like to say, feel free to raise your hand and I will call on you as soon as I have finished the applicable reading. And I will pause at the end of each underlined group of comments to ask if anyone has had feedback. If not, I will just continue. So with that, let's take off and read these comments. So first of all, the RYSG, BRG, and Affilius and INTA suggested adjusting language to clarify that ICANN cannot unilaterally reject an application without an appropriate reason. From the RYSG, BRG, and Affilius, just one moment. Emily has provided clarification that the proposed language on slide 5 that I had read earlier was actually put forward during one of the previous calls on the topic. So thanks for that clarification, Emily, and we will keep that in mind when we move forward with our discussion here. So Registry Stakeholder Group, BRG, and Affilius said that in other areas of the applicant guidebook, there are clear definitions of why an application may be declined. This paragraph in Module 6, where the applicant terms and conditions are in the applicant guidebook, would benefit from either a rewording to further specify why an applicant would be declined or from referencing related materials in other proportions of the guidebook, such as Section 1.2.1 on eligibility and sections 2.1 and 2.2, which describe the evaluation and review process. Alternative language could be, ICANN reserves the right to reject any application that ICANN is prohibited from considering under applicable law, policy, or eligibility and evaluation requirements outlined in sections 1.2, 2.1 through 2, and 3.2.1. In the applicant guidebook,
ICANN's bylaws prohibit it from discriminating against parties. Therefore, if ICANN rejects an application, it should only do so for good cause and not treat similarly situated parties differently. Similarly, INTA said that it is not the role of the PDP working group to interpret existing contractual provisions, including the existing applicant terms and conditions, where there is a disagreement as to the effect of these terms and conditions. That would be the role of the court. That would be the role of the court or appropriate arbitral forum. However, INTA does not consider that it would be appropriate for ICANN to claim the rights to reject any future application without reason or for a reason which conflicts with the applicant guidebook or policy. I just lost my screen here. To do so would be inconsistent with ICANN's bylaws and obligations, including Section 1.2, the commitment to apply policies consistently and neutrally, Section 2.3, non-discriminatory treatment, and Section 3.1, the obligations of openness and transparency. Since this matter is being debated within the PDP, and some might interpret Section 3 of the Terms and Conditions as giving ICANN an absolute right to reject, ICANN would suggest that the provision warrants redrafting to make it absolutely clear that ICANN cannot unilaterally reject an application for reasons other than as specifically set out in the applicant guidebook. So, that was kind of a long reading, and I think we'll have many more of them. But does anyone agree with the making reference to clarifying that ICANN cannot unilaterally reject an application, but more so to referencing the limitations or the areas in which it can reject an application? Does anyone disagree with this? Okay, bit of a tough crowd tonight, so all right, that's fine. We'll just keep cruising along here. So continuing the same question, Janik, I always pronounce your last name incorrectly, Janik Sko, stated that ICANN should not have the right to stop processing an application unless the application is disqualified according to rules in the applicant guidebook. ICANN should never have the right to stop processing an application unless an application is disqualified according to rules set out in the guidebook, including contention set resolution mechanisms. So I think this can be kind of introduced, at least tied together with the above comments we just read. I always say this one wrong too. Norid, ALAC, and John Poole stated that ICANN should have this right. So, from Norid, we have, in our view, this gives ICANN extensive rights. However, ICANN offers a resource at their discretion and enters into a private contract with the applicant, and they should be free to set conditions. However, ICANN should make the applicant terms and conditions as predictable as possible. The expression, applicable law or policy, with advantage be extended to be more exhaustively presented. These periods are hard to see here. Let me zoom in a little bit. If ICANN finds it politically difficult to go forward with an application, for instance, after immense resistance from the GAC, they should be able to choose not going into this kind of problems that could lead to delays and political difficulties. We should never forget that there are still forces wanting to destroy the multi-stakeholder model. Greg, you have your hand straight. Please, I invite you to take the floor.
Thanks, Michael. I wanted to give your voice a rest. This first comment is interesting after hearing several comments saying that ICANN shouldn't have the right. First, I think there seems to be a factual predicate in the highlighted language that I, for one, would take issue with that ICANN offers this resource at their discretion. I just think that's not true. It's not the discretion of ICANN, the organization. This is something that's decided and recommended as policy by the community, and in particular the GNSO as the policy development body for GTLDs. So it's to kind of wrap this in a concept of the discretion of ICANN, the organization, seems to me to be highly troublesome and inaccurate, and really kind of casts the rest of this in doubt as a statement. Also, I think, you know, the issue of whether it finds it immensely difficult to go forward with a, or politically difficult to go forward, I think ICANN traditions of transparency, more than traditions, kind of root core values of transparency would dictate that any reasons for a choice be clearly spelled out and not hidden under the cloak of discretion when in fact there are real reasons for it. And of course, if there aren't real reasons, that's even more troubling. And as far as forces wanting to destroy the multi-stakeholder model, I think the this comment is doing as good a job of any as I've seen of destroying the multi-stakeholder model in just a few sentences, giving ICANN sole discretion and indicating that it would be a good idea to allow it to bow to the will of the GAC while not even letting the rest of the community know that's why they're making a decision. Frankly, I'm shocked. Thanks.
Good. From what it sounds like you're saying, it looks like there's a lot of misconceptions within the within the commenters. I'm trying to find the politically correct words. It seems that there are some they have some misconceptions about what I is and how it represents, perhaps. And I'm, like I said, this is just how I might have, tasted from that, but. So I think that a good and good insight there. Does anyone have? Would anyone like to add to what Greg has said? No. Oh, Gigi, you have your hand up. Feel free to take the floor.
Thank you. This is Gigi Levine. I can see where there could be occasion for ICANN to reject an application for reasons not predicted and outlined in the applicant guidebook, but I'm wondering, should there be an appeals process, or is there an appeals process for ICANN to reject an application? If an applicant is rejected, is there a process to appeal that decision? And if there's not, should there be?
Thanks, Gigi. I think we do cover that in the next set of questions. Sorry, the 2.5.2. I do know that there's the reconsideration request that is already present within the ICANN's bylaws. But in strictly to new GTLD decisions, at least in regards to the application, I think that we explore the idea of the appeals mechanism in the next question. We can review that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks for the comment. Okay, where was I? It was on slide 10. Very quickly, from what the ALAC had the comment from the ALAC said that, yes, ICANN should have that right, the right to reject applications in their sole discretion, and it should be clearly spelled out in the applicant guidebook and in an ICANN policy. So, Emily, was there more to this quote by chance? Excuse me, I'm coming down with the call holders. So Emily's going to check for us. But would anyone, if anyone's here from the ALAC, and I think Alan, your name's at the top, but would
can more insight be brought, perhaps in regards to this comment? That's the entire comment for this section. So, I don't see anyone raising their hand. So perhaps we might want to reach out to the ALAC for more input in regards to why ICANN should have that. I will continue moving on, considering the number of slides we have. And yes, Jim kindly pointed out that that slide 11 is a repeat from the questionnaire. My apologies on that. Oh, but unfortunately, I did not copy John Poole's comment from this section. Emily, could I please ask you to pull his comment in regards to question 2.5.1? I just want to make sure that we have it for the record, and not have it because of an error on my part. Oh, and Steve provided that comment as in regards to, so John says yes and yes. Okay, good. Got it for the record. Thank you. So moving on here with questions 2.5.2, and let me read this one, and this is the one that, perfect timing, I know Gigi's question as well, on the appeals mechanism. So according to Section 6 of the applicant terms and conditions, the covenant not to sue ICANN in It's the beginning of flu season here in Japan, so I'm not sure if I have it, but we'll hope not. The covenant not to sue ICANN, an applicant foregoes any right to sue ICANN once an application is submitted for any reason. Currently, an applicant can only appeal an ICANN decision through the accountability mechanisms, which have a limited ability to address the substance of the ICANN decision. If ICANN had an effective appeals process, as asked about in question 3.5.2 below, 2.5.2, I'm not going to get into that, but for an applicant to challenge the decisions of the ICANN staff, board, and or any entity's delegated decision making authority over the assignment, contracting, and delegation of NUJI TLDs, would a covenant not to sue be more acceptable? Please explain. So in other words, if we had that appeals mechanism in place, would the covenant not to sue be acceptable, be more acceptable? So from INTA, NORID, ROI, Registry Stakeholder Group, BRG, and Aphelios, they support establishing an appeals and prior process prior to opening subsequent procedures. INTA says that INTA believes that an appeals process would be beneficial. In the previous round, that it was decided not to allow appeals for most decisions. However, in practice, this has resulted in extensive use of time-consuming and complex requests for consideration and independent reviews. In order to allow fair recourse for applicants, independent appeals processes should be identified prior to future releases of NUJI TLDs with clear criteria for appeal identified. NORID said, yes, the covenant not to sue would be more acceptable. Yes, the covenant not to sue would be more acceptable if there was an effective appeals process. As it is now, the registrant is rather without legal protection if feeling that the decision taken by ICANN is really wrong and not based on what is listed in the applicant terms and conditions. To establish this appeals process mechanism could be a prerequisite for receiving new applications. I'm just stopping and rereading this myself to see if it relates with their previous comment.
So moving on, and this is our last comment for this underlined section of comments. The Registry Stakeholder BRG and affiliates share the same wording in saying that, yes, ICANN should introduce an appeals process for rejected applications for long-term scalability, as it is also suggested in Section 3.1.4 of this document. I think that's the work track 3, to prevent unnecessary complications in the future and to provide applicants with fair recourse, an appeals process should be specified and defined before the next round of applications. Similarly, for applicants who do appeal an ICANN decision and attempt to do so via legal means, having an appeals process in place means preventing any exceptional cases that would take time and resources from ICANN. With such a setup, it would be more acceptable to include such a covenant not too soon. So that concludes our comments, our underlined state comments for this. Is anyone in approval or disapproval, or would have like to comment further on any of the comments I have just read? So it does seem like we have a lot of support, at least from our kind commenters in this section, to have an appeals process in place. Let's continue on further to see what our other commentators provide. So the ALEC suggests that if appeals are allowed, they should only be allowed when decision is based on an error of fact that ICANN is available at the time. The ALEC suggests that appeals are allowed, they should only... Okay, sorry, it's the exact same. Nominate recommended adopting a better mechanism to require ICANN to review operational decisions related to applications. In practical terms, it is totally understandable to ensure that ICANN does not get inundated with litigation. However, a better mechanism to require ICANN to review operational decisions in respect of new TTLD applications, which may be totally unreasonable or irrational, would be useful. Sorry, I just thought there was an earthquake again. John Poole stated that the interests of the global internet community should receive priority over the interests of registry operators. More acceptable for whom? For contacted parties of the global internet community? Sorry, the global internet community, who ICANN is supposed to be representing, trumps the self-centered and selfish special interests of registry operators. Steve, I requested to share my screen here. Begin sharing desktop. No? Okay. It disappeared. All right. So, besides John Poole's comment, it seems a good majority of our commenters are at least in support for having an appeals mechanism in place and making sure that it's something that is established when error of fact that ICANN that ICANN was an error or against, they perhaps did something wrong within its decision. I don't see John Poole on here to comment and expand further on his comments. So, and Gigi has also agreed on having the appeals mechanism in place. Would anyone like, this will end our question for this section, would anyone like to comment at this point? Michelle, I heard you speak. Am I being heard by everybody?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Good. All right. So it seems so y'all are making this easy for me tonight. Thank you. We might get done rather early. All right, so I'm going to cruise on to the next question, unless anyone has something to say. John, you've kindly presented a comment in the chat. We need an appeal process, but make it loser pays as a deterrent to frivolous payments. Got that on record. Thank you. So I'm going to move on to question 2.5.3. According to Section 14 of the Applicant Terms and Conditions, ICANN has the ability to make changes to the applicant guidebook. One task of this working group is to address the issue of predictability in future rounds, including with respect to the applicant guidebook. Do you think that ICANN should be limited in its ability to make changes to the applicant guidebook after an application procedure has been initiated? Please explain. So our first underlined group of comments are from INTA, NORAD, NOMINET, and VALIDEUS, emphasizing that the importance of ensuring predictability, planning in advance, and learning from the 2012 round. Those excerpts are, INTA said that there is a need for predictability for all concerned. It should be an aim of this PDP working group to endeavor to surface likely issues and address them wherever possible so as to minimize the prospect of late changes to the applicant guidebook. First, and from NORAD, we have, first and foremost, we would hope that fewer changes will be required to be made in the applicant guidebook in subsequent procedures. We all know how many years it took to reach a compromise in the first round. It is of fundamental importance that there is a certain certainty in the process and that all parties know what they can plan for. However, we think that ICANN should not receive applications until the applicant guidebook has been accepted by all stakeholder groups. The change unilaterally after that will make the predictability very poor. NOMINET stated that we would hope that many fewer changes will be required to be made to the applicant guidebook and subsequent procedures. It's fundamentally important that there is certainty in the process. And Validius kindly commented that business applicants require greater certainty and consistency. Many of the new GTLD applicants who are not from the traditional ICANN community have found it inconceivable that ICANN should repeatedly change fundamental terms of the applicant guidebook after the process has commenced, seemingly without there being any ground for objection or sanction when applicants have invested significant time and financial resources on their applications. Two such examples would be the issues of closed generics and the three terms identified as not to be delegated due to name collision. These issues should have been properly considered and addressed in advance, not halfway through the process. Whilst one might assume that round one will now have flushed everything out, it is important that where issues have been identified as contentious, there is a firm decision made on how to address this. This should serve to keep the risk of future midstream changes to a minimum. And I believe that concludes our section for the comments. This underlying section. Susan, thank you for joining us today, and I wish you a pleasant day. Rest of your day. Jim, I note your Christina. Thank you for joining us. Cheryl, I hope you're not leaving. But Jim, I do note the piece that you provided that Jeff wrote in regards to your comment. So I will invite you to comment on that once we get to it. So for the upcoming section, BC and Jim, Prendergast, for the record, stated that ICANN's ability to change the applicant guidebook should be limited. First of all, from the BC, ICANN's ability, Jim, I'll get you in just one moment. Let me just read this one from the BC first. ICANN's ability to change the applicant guidebook should be very limited. The GNSO community should be asked to clarify its policy recommendations for any implementation decision regarding that policy. And Jim, I'll read it if you want me to, but I think your voice sounds much better than mine, so I'll let you take the floor. Jim, your microphone might be on mute if you're trying to speak.
Sorry, I took you off speaker and still had you on mute. Sorry about that. Can you hear me?
I'm clear. You have the floor.
Okay. Yeah, so this issue of ICANN insisting on a language that would allow them to unilaterally amend the contract is something that I think really struck a nerve with registries. You know, without going into a lot of detail, Jeff has an excellent piece that he wrote back in 2013 for Circle ID that gives a lot of background on it. But the short story is, after accepting all of these applications and taking $185,000 from applicants, ICANN insisted in language in the contract that it would allow it to unilaterally amend the contract. Now, that's not where it ultimately wound up, in the sense that it's not that bright line of distinction. Through the insistence of the broader community beyond registries, a process was negotiated and put in place that has, several checkpoints and waypoints along the way that before ICANN could get to that point. But I think it's a good example of, again, applicants fully, applicants submitting to the process, applying in good faith, ICANN taking their money, and then changing the rules of the game after everything that's happened. So, it's not like we haven't been through a round previously like we had in 2012. We've been through this before. We are still dealing with some issues that I think we need to hammer out, but for the most part, I think we need to be in a position, for predictability for applicants that all of these issues are nailed down before an application acceptance period is begun or a rolling basis is begun and money has changed hands. Otherwise, we're going to be right back in this situation where you'll have aggrieved parties where the rules have changed after they've complied in full faith, and that's just not fair to applicants, and that's going to create all sorts of problems that we've already seen in this round, so it's best to avoid it. Thanks.
Thank you, John. Jim, sorry, Jim, for your comment. And if there is anyone else that would like to add to that, then I invite them to do that. But I did want to bring up something that is written within the Section 14 comment, and I think we had a little bit of a discussion about it in our first call that where we looked at the applicant terms and conditions. But I think the latter part of Section 14 says that if such changes are made after an application has been submitted, or ICANN make such changes and there's material hardship, ICANN will work to accommodate the applicant. And something to that effect is written within the Section 14. Noting that there are many applicants within here, or at least many individuals that assisted applicants, could anyone attest to the ICANN working to accommodate them, or what kind of accommodations were provided? That's sorry, Jim. You took the words out of my mouth. That's the question I'm looking to ask. I almost wish we put that into the CC2 comments itself, but a little bit late now. Perhaps CC3, if there's a nightmare coming up. Jim, you have the floor again, I think.
Hey, Michael, Jim Prendergast. Yeah, maybe it's a question we can pose to ICANN if they can provide examples of where they've accommodated applicants from their perspective.
Might be an idea worth exploring. Let's definitely keep that in mind. But we are still in this section, so I just want to keep. Sorry, my computer keeps notifying me of other meetings that are starting at this time. Let's continue section, and if the group does see it as something that worth asking, ICANN, then we might want to ask. But I don't want to. I don't want to go too off topic, as the idea here is making sure it's predictable in the future. But if ICANN, if it's opposed and the language needs to be kept as it is now, then definitely we need to look at what kind of accommodations are proposed or are offered, I guess. I'm sorry, I cannot remember what page I was on. I had to scroll up for looking at that language. Just a moment, please, for time. Okay, let's see. Was I on 2.5.2? I'm sorry, just please bear with me for a few seconds here. So we were in section 14, and the question, Validatus' comment, after we read Jim's comment. Yes, perfect. Okay, so I'm on slide 21 now. So INTA, NORD, BRG, Registry Stakeholder Group, Affiliates Validatus, and Jim also suggested that specific conditions and rules for changes in the applicant guidebook. INTA's suggestion is that the extent... Hold on just a moment. I just want to make sure this isn't a repeat of what I said. Nope, this is a new section. Okay, just making sure. Sorry about this, everyone. We have a bit understaffed today. So yes, to the extent that change is unavoidable, applicants should be permitted to make corresponding changes to their application to address them without penalty and be granted the time to do so. Even if this means extending the application window, applicants should also be permitted to withdraw their applications with full refund if the changes are such that it is no longer attractive to them to proceed with their application, and this should be a decision for the applicant alone, not at ICANN's discretion. From NORD, we have, however, this depends on whether the result for next round will be one window opened and then closed and nothing more, or several windows, one after another. In the last instance, there might be necessary to correct possible flaws between the windows. In these instances, ICANN should seek consensus from the stakeholder groups before opening the next window and be very careful to make announcements on the changes. Just trying to understand. Okay, I think I understand the comment in full detail now. And once again, if anyone has anything to say, please feel free to raise your hand or check comment in the chat box, as we're not very chattery today, and I think I can read them. in the BRG, we have that in response to the 2012 round introduced complexities that had not been anticipated or issues had been left open. Willist lessons learned can be applied to future policies and processes. There is the likelihood that different issues will arise in the future. Therefore, changes should be allowed, but the process should be sufficiently robust to capture and analyze and process the issues effectively. Any changes to the guidebook after applications have been received should be limited and also be subject to suitable reviews and objection process. I'm a bit interested in regards to the objection process. I'm assuming that would be something where the stakeholder groups would have the ability to review and perhaps voice an opinion of objection in regards to such changes. We look at previous comment from NARD that probably ties in, or at least is a similar idea. I don't see anyone besides myself from the BRG here, and I'm not in a position to comment in regards to the background information in regards to that, so might be something worth asking for more comment. So from the Registry Stakeholder Group affiliates, we have, yes, certain changes, I'm going to assume that's changes, should be allowed, but ICANN should offer a time period in which applicants may prepare for or object to any changes to the guidebook. For example, ICANN shouldn't be permitted to change the application fee after it accepts applications. Any legitimate changes must have good cause, and ICANN should provide reasonable warning to all new GTLD applicants before any changes in the guidebook take effect to allow applicants at a level of predictability before any changes in the guidebook Just a minute. Cheryl, I'm sorry, could you take over for a brief moment, please? I'm sorry, I'm stopping in the middle of the Registry Stakeholder Group and Affiliates comment. Or Aubrey, just for a brief moment. I have a little matter I need to take care of.
Aubrey, is your audio better than mine? It's Cheryl. Happy to do so if you don't have good audio.
Sound good, Cheryl?
Yep, I am speaking. I am speaking.
And you're speaking with lots of echo, too, it seems.
Which is why I stopped, Avery. Oh, dear. Did you want to take it, Avery? Maybe my delay is a bit much at the moment.
Okay, yeah, I guess I can. So where was he reading? I was not looking at my screen when he was reading. What page are we on? We are on 22. Okay. And please give me a pointer on where I should start reading from. Sorry, I was
I'm back. I'm back. Sorry about that. I'm back.
Oh, you're back. Well, what we managed to do was just sort of dawdle while you were gone, so thanks for coming back.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. My son woke up. Had to quickly put him back to sleep. Let me start over from the beginning. My sincere apologies about that rudeness. So from the Registry Stakeholder Group and Affiliates, yes, certain changes should be allowed, but ICANN should offer a time period which applicants may prepare for or object to any changes to the guidebook. For example, ICANN shouldn't be permitted to change the application fee after it accepts applications. Any legitimate changes must have good cause, and ICANN should provide reasonable warning to all new GTLD applications before any changes in the guidebook take effect to allow applicants a level of predictability, while also giving ICANN the ability to modify and adapt as needed without making the process overly rigid. Applicants should also be given a reasonable opportunity to amend a pending application if the change is made after the application is submitted that is material to the application. Application amendments should be limited to addressing the applicant guidebook change and the time frame in which amendments may be made should take into account time for applicant to first object to the applicant guidebook changes. That was a mouthful. Aubrey, you have the floor.
Yeah, this is at the end of the call, but I wanted to say a lot of this very much fits with some of the stuff we're talking about in terms of the flexibility document, having a few conversations in the background about some of these being good test cases for whatever framework we come up with for flexibility. But some of these may also be worth looking at in terms of input to that process that we're reviewing now to see whether people think those cases are covered there or not. But I think this very much fits with a lot of that work, and I just wanted to point that out. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. Actually, I think we have another 30 minutes. We extended the time for the Work Track 2 calls. And
oh, quite sorry. I didn't realize.
We wanted to, at least if I'm in the right, Emily, Steve, am I correct?
It seems you are. Correct. It seems
okay.
It was me that was wrong.
No, not a problem. We just wanted to make everybody in this working group suffer, so we extended the calls and made them weekly. So, yes, and thank you very much, Aubrey, for that input, and it's very important to note. I will keep going with my comments as my reading as well, unless there's anybody else that would like to speak. But from Validaeus, we have, since issues may always arise which were unanticipated, it is pragmatic to allow for the possibility of change after the application procedure has been initiated. But this must be kept to a minimum. Applicants affected by such changes must also be given adequate time to consider the impact on them and, if they choose to, withdraw without penalty. If necessary, an application window should be extended to allow for such review. And Jim also said, going forward, any post-application procedure changes should be made in concert with the community. Seems like we lost quite a few people. Hope we didn't scare them away. But it seems like so a majority of comments are stating that there should be at least a window or some time to amend applications when changes to the guidebook are presented. But of course, there are other comments in this, so let me read from what the ALAC has. So ALAC agrees. Alan, you have your hand raised?
You can read it first, but I was simply going to say that I'm rather surprised that the ALAC said that, and I suspect there was an error in creating that response. I wasn't actively involved in doing this particular response since I'm a member of this group. But I'm rather surprised of it, and I will bring it back for consideration.
Perfect. Thank you for the note, Alan. I'll just read it really quickly, though. ALAC agrees that after the application procedure has been initiated, the guidebook should not be changed. So definitely understand here that the guidebook shouldn't be changed. And the guidebook should not be changed. Yeah, I'll let you get some more feedback on that and get back to us on that.
Yeah, it's Alan. Just to be clear, given that we have comments from registries and applicants saying yes, under some conditions it should be changed, and the ALAC, who's looking out for user rights, says no, it shouldn't be changed under any conditions, I think it's rather anomalous. So I will simply note that, not being able to change the response that was given. But I will bring it back and follow up here if applicable.
Right, perfect. Thank you, Ellen. Jim, you have your hand raised? You have the floor.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Jim Prayas. I just want to bring something up that I mentioned again that I think is important as we consider this. And you know, it's not like we're going into this blind. We've had the benefit of the last 5, 7 years, however long it's been in this previous round, to learn from mistakes, see how it's played out in reality. So, you know, I think there, you know, we can avoid many of the discussions that we've had recently about changes being made after that book's been finalized by making sure that we nail down as much of this on the front end as possible. I just can't see there being, well, I would hope that there are not any major issues that will suddenly appear out of nowhere in this next process that we haven't either seen in the first round or haven't anticipated through the work of this group.
Thanks, Jim. And you make a very factual statement, I think. We have experienced many of the problems, and I really hope we don't experience new ones or unexpected ones. But, of course, we need to try to at least have some leeway in here for predictability and making sure, well, if there is changes, that there is an amicable way to address that. Ellen, I know you had your hand raised. I think you disappeared, so I'm just going to assume it's old hat.
No.
Sorry, old hand.
Yeah, it's Ellen. I was just agreeing with Jim that going forward, we should be able to do a much better job than we did before. I agree with most of the comments that we still need some escape hatch, and we should be able to be a lot kinder to the applicants if we have to use it. But, you know, hopefully we'll do a much better job than we did before. We did learn a lot, and hopefully this PDP will take all that into account.
We did. Definitely. I think the whole point of the PDP, not to shoot the elephant that's in the room, if that is still an American expression, or perhaps that came out of it's getting late. I'm just going to keep going. Sorry, John Poole stated that ICANN should not be limited in its ability to change the applicant guidebook, and he says that no, TLDs are not private property. Jim, I think it came out of a small North Dakota town where we didn't have much else to do besides cow tipping on Saturday nights. But you didn't hear that from me, and I hope that doesn't go against the standards of behavior. Like I said, it's getting late. Okay, we got one more question to go, people. Ladies and gentlemen, so let's get through this. Question 2.5.4, and it does say that this is 2.5.3, but I think it's 2.5.4. According to Section 14 of the applicant terms and conditions, ICANN has the ability to make changes to the applicant guidebook. One task of this working. I'm really starting to think I wrote the. I did these.
It's Alan speaking. The 2.5.3 is replicated here in error. I have 2.5.4 in front of me if you want me to read it.
No, I think Steve put it in here. I thank you, everyone.
Okay,
I'm really not doing well tonight. Yes, do you believe that any changes are needed in the terms of conditions in Module 6 of the applicant guidebook? If so, what are those changes and what is the basis or rationale for needing to do so? So the comments from this are, Alan, you still have your hand raised. I'm assuming it's...
No, sorry. I was just offering to correct it.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. Once again, I'm really sorry, everyone. This has been a really busy 2 weeks for the this working track, especially. But yes, I'm mumbling. So the Registered Stakeholder Group, VRG, and affiliates suggested to have specific changes. Yes, a summary from the above. Modify the language in Section 6.3 to reference related eligibility and evaluation criteria, Sections 1.2, 2.1 through 2, and 3.2.1 of the applicant guidebook to further clarify when and why an application may be declined. 2, maintain the covenant not to sue only if an appeals process is drafted and defined within the guidebook. And 3, specify a time frame for proposed changes, updates to the guidebook to provide applicants with an adequate warning. These were actually bulleted, I believe, didn't carry over well in the copy paste. Janet Scow stated that ICANN should be allowed to make changes to the terms and conditions, but should seek to minimize the need for changes. Well, we're losing participants fast. Yes, ICANN should be allowed to make changes, but applicants have to be informed about this risk very clearly before applying. The ICANN community may discover a need to update the requirements, new type of security threat, or whatever across all GTLDs. That said, ICANN and the GAC should please minimize such changes. So that is it for question 2.5.4. We do have some other general comments, and for the record, I must go through these. The GAC pointed out pointed to its comments in response to questions in section 1.3, which I believe was for the working track 1, but it must be read here for the record. The GAC supports any reasonable measures that streamline application procedures, thereby reducing compliance costs, but that also enable due consideration of public policy issues raised by the GAC. As noted in the GAC's response to the first round of community consultation questions from the PDP working group with regard to predictability, many GTLD policy issues require resolution at the global rather than the national level. For many purposes and practice, this means resolution within ICANN processes to ensure consistency, as application of national laws country by country may not be sufficient. The GAC and others need a degree of flexibility to respond to emerging issues in this global space, which is operated by ICANN and the community according to contractual arrangements and community-developed policies and procedures. The need for such flexibility continues after the conclusion of a GNSOPP. So the GAC is saying that they need to have the flexibility or the ability to be able to comment and offer advice in regards to necessary changes or issues that are being raised in the global, on a global scale, or at least across several countries. Gigi, you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I was just observing. It doesn't sound like anyone is saying that no changes should be allowed, but that there is a need to improve predictability and that, you know, giving some opportunity to applicants in the event of change to modify their application or withdraw their application seems to be a fair midway point. Thank you.
Thank you, Gigi, and I definitely agree with that. I don't see anyone saying that we need to get rid of, I don't see anyone saying that we can't, we say no changes, I'm looking and saying we need flexibility. But of course, as Jim stated, we should be able to, well, kill the elephant in the room and shoot the elephant that's in the room, and we've already done it once. Why would we make the same mistake again twice? But just to make sure we have that escape hatch, of course. So flexibility for predictability and making sure we have the flexibility in place. So, are there any other comments that anyone would like to raise? If not, you know exactly what I'm going to, what my next move is. Gigi, you still have your hand raised. I'm going to assume that's old hand. Perfect. All right, then, everyone. I started out this call with a very cool head, but halfway through, I think I have hit the crazies. Thank you very – sorry, I think I've become crazy. Thank you very much for sticking with me this long. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. And with that, I'm going to close this week's meeting and hope that I can get some more work done before our next meeting next week. I will keep you all posted.